Are you a real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, well, actually? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we quiz the smartest people we know and find out why they love what they love. I'm Helen Hong. And now, socially distancing from our homes in Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen Hong. A pleasure to see you, as always.
Very nice to see you.
We have a theme episode today, kind of by accident, but nevertheless, we've got a couple of our guests who are joining us from Minnesota. Have you had a chance to visit Minnesota, the land of many lakes, 10,000 lakes?
Wow, nothing is really jumping out to me. Which makes me think that I haven't visited Minnesota because I am a fan of Minneapolis because Prince is from there.
Sure,
and
yes.
Lived there and famously would pop up and perform in small venues there. And I always just fantasized about being in some random pub in Minnesota and Prince would roll in. Like I would die. Oh, gosh.
And worst case, you get to be in a random pub.
Yeah. So I don't know too much about Minnesota. I have not spent that much time in Minnesota, if at all. But I fantasize about Minneapolis. I guess I put Minneapolis on an iconic stage in my mind because of Prince.
Interesting. Yes. But St. Paul can go to hell.
Yeah.
As you're concerned.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's alienate
it's
certain parts.
It's the bad twin. I'm kidding. No, I'm not. I don't take offense, twin.
We love
cities.
Everybody. Yeah. By the way, if we have any listeners in St. Paul, please let us know and let us know nicely. Today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they might not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics, and finally declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Helen, who is up first?
She is an award-winning singer, songwriter, and playwright who's released 11 solo albums and who performed over 50 live kitchen COVID concerts, which can now be seen on YouTube. It's Jonathan Brooks.
Hi, Jonatha Brooke.
Woohoo!
Jonatha providing her own crowd noise. That's a trick you learn as a live performer for so long.
I know. And after 57 COVID concerts, I still didn't learn how to make that happen as I was live streaming. It was so dumb of me.
We're all learning as we go. Mm-hmm. Well, in addition to all of the wonderful things that Helen said, I need to say that for me personally, this is such a treat because I've been a fan of yours for, I realize, 25 years now. I have all of your albums. I've seen you in concert dozens of times. It means so much to me to have you here. And I was kind of curious, sort of, who's your Jonathan Brooke? Who's someone who you've admired and you can't believe, oh my gosh, I get to work with this person?
Ooh, well, that would be all the people that were on my records over the years.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Gadd, Joe Sample, Marcus Miller.
We had Marcus Miller on Go Fact Yourself as a guest.
No way.
Yeah, the jazz composer.
He knows everything about everything.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting.
Did he win?
He was an expert for somebody else, and he won in the sense that he completely surprised his friend.
It was Alonzo Bowden.
It was Alonzo Bowden, right.
So cool. I was just listening on a plane on the way back from Nashville last week. I was listening to that song by Beyonce, All Night, where Marcus Miller is playing the bass part, and I could listen to that song 100 million times and never get tired of what Marcus plays.
Yeah, well, that definitely is a good comparison because I listen to your stuff millions of times and also never get sick of it as well. So that's so cool. All right, enough gushing, at least for now. We mentioned these kitchen COVID concerts where you were performing every week live on YouTube and Facebook. What was the motivation for starting that?
I maybe have an addictive nature, so I got kind of addicted to it, but it also gave me purpose. And I felt like if I stop, I will have no purpose. And then what will I do with myself and how will I make a living? Because it actually became a source of staying alive income-wise. So it really saved me and my husband because he's also in the music business. You know, his stuff shut down too. He manages recording artists. So like we were all grounded. There was nothing coming in. It's like, all right, I'm going to do a concert every week and see what happens. And it worked.
You think it changed you as a performer?
It did. It really hones your chops, man. Because if, you know, this two-dimensional thing, I'm sure you guys are familiar with it. It is not easy. And it does feel like 200% of the same amount of energy is just barely enough to really feel like you are engaging all those people and giving them what they want and feeling like you've done a good job. You can't just phone it in. And then I started doing this thing after each song I would perform, I would say, thank you. thank you. And that sort of made it feel a little bit more like, you know, pretend real.
Well, speaking of performing in different kinds of ways, you've gotten more into playwriting in recent years. How did you get into doing theater?
It was preordained by my mother, I think. I ended up taking my mother in 2010. She had Alzheimer's and needed round-the-clock care. So everything else ground to a halt, and I moved mom to New York to live with me. For the next 2 years, it was my full-time job, was caring for mom, and it became this incredible love story, adventure, theater of the crazy, and mom herself was complicit in the plan. She would always say, like, Booley, that's my nickname, or this is really good stuff. Like, we got to make a play out of this. We could take it to Broadway. You know, the fat old lady and the beautiful kid, we could make a lot of money. And then I was like, you know what? Like, mom, you're demented, but you're right. Like, this is way bigger than the two of us and me writing songs about it.
Yeah. That show became My Mother Has Four Noses, which I was fortunate enough to see in New York. And you had a new theater project called Tempest that is kind of a sci-fi, grief, human, futuristic kind of a thing. Where are you in the process of that show?
So I'm co-writing a musical with Jacqueline Backus, who's just a genius young playwright. We just turned in our first draft to our producers. It's a commission. So, and it was accepted. So, you know, we hurdled that bar, and we are refining and revising and hoping to turn in our second draft September 1st.
And if people want to hear sort of a preview of that, one of your recent COVID kitchen concerts is you actually showed some of the work in progress, which is a very vulnerable thing for you. For our listeners, Jonathan's literally biting her fingernails right now, just thinking about it.
Yeah, I don't even think I got through any of the songs without screwing them up, but it's good to be vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. Last thing I want to ask you about, you are, I believe, from Chicago, spent a lot of time in Boston, lived in New York. You now are in Minnesota, and we have a bit of a Minnesota-themed episode. How did you end up in Minnesota, and how do you like it there?
I love it here. My husband grew up, you know, just 10 blocks from where we are now. So I was not afraid of Minneapolis. And, you know, because most people are like, oh my God, it's so cold. I mean, I grew up in Boston, so I'm not afraid of the cold. And it's a great town, and I think I have high hopes for it. And we were able to move out of New York and actually buy a place to live, which would not have happened in New York City. We were just priced out and tired and too cranky to live crappy in a, you know, studio apartment. So we actually bought a house in Minneapolis.
Yay, congrats.
Yay. Thank you. We just fixed the windows because they're like from 1927.
Well, Minnesota is lucky to have you, and we are lucky to have you. Jonathan Brook, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, Helen, against whom will Jonathan be competing?
He is an award-winning actor and writer from Mystery Science Theater 3000, who can be seen as part of the movie riffing duo, The Mads. It's Trace Beaulieu.
Hello, Trace Beaulieu.
Hey, hello, everyone. Jonathan, welcome to Minnesota.
Thanks, Trace. Are you here, too?
Yes, I live out near the St. Croix River, which is east of you.
And how did you end up in Minnesota, Trace?
My mother born me here.
yes.
And I had no choice in the matter. No, I grew up in Hopkins, Minnesota, which is a western suburb of Minneapolis. Lived in South Minneapolis for many years. Moved to Los Angeles for a while. Realized I missed trees and lakes and water and moved back here about 15 years ago.
Excellent. Well, you were an expert for us on our previous episode, along with Frank Conniff on episode 78 for Robert Lopez in the topic of Mystery Science Theater 3000. And what I loved about that episode so much is that you seemed as happy to meet our guest as our guest was to meet you. That was an honor for you as well.
Oh, absolutely. Frank gets out more than I do. He knows more famous people. So anytime I can meet people in this format without me having to leave my house.
That's right. We bring the famous people to you. That's our promise on Go Factor. So
it's a delivery system. It's like Grubhub for people.
We're looking for a new slogan. Maybe it's that. It's Grubhub for people.
It's Mug Hub.
When you were on the show before, you talked about your experience of going to the Peabody Awards. We didn't talk about you being nominated for two Emmys for your work on Mystery Science Theater 3000. What was your Emmy experience like?
We went twice. The first time it was all very exciting. And the second time we said, as soon as we lose, let's go and have dinner somewhere. We were really fortunate. We got to meet some of our heroes from our childhood. John Astin is an example of really, really nice people. We got to be the kids from the Cowtown puppet show going to Hollywood.
Ever since then, you said, you know, let the famous people come to me.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I'm in my garage. You can find me.
Exactly. We were talking with Jonathan about what it was like for her to perform with no live audience or feedback. And I was thinking about that with MST3K. That's actually how it started. You were doing these incredible jokes without live audience or feedback. What was that journey like working this kind of humor both without and then with an audience?
Well, it was so much fun to do live shows after being in the studio for so many years. There's no better drug than hearing laughter when you've written a joke and you go, wow, I guess that was a joke.
That's why I became a stand-up comic and not a meth addict.
Yes. I'm a meth addict now.
Oh, no. We're breaking news. Trace, you went the other direction.
Well, now there's no audience, so I have to get that adrenaline rush somehow. My goal each month when we do these shows is to make Frank Conniff laugh. Mm. So if I can score a couple of jokes off Frank, then I'm happy.
Well, you've got another Mad show coming up on August 10th. Is that going to be a live show, a virtual show, a combination?
Whatever this is. Whatever.
Oh, okay.
Whatever this thing is. I don't know what they call it anymore. But it'll be live.
It is live. But it's virtual. You're going to be riffing live, but people are not in the same room with you watching it.
God, I hope not.
Oh, boy.
It's a very tiny room. Yeah. And then the show is available later for download. So
got
I guess we're all good things. We're live and then not live.
Aren't we all? But before we started recording, Jonathan mentioned that she had Googled you. And I did the same thing when I was doing some research. And I noticed that in my Google autocomplete, when I start to write your name, it says Trace Beaulieu - American puppeteer. And I was wondering how you feel about that being your first identity, according to the internet.
That's fine. We all know that the internet is wrong.
Okay. You're not now, is it the American part or the puppeteer part?
It's the combination. It's like, so can I only puppeteer on this continent? Is that North and South America or just the United States?
I see. Okay. So the fact that it was more of a continental thing as opposed to just the country.
I'd love to puppeteer in Canada one day. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. This is how show business works. We're so happy that you joined us, Trace Beaulieu. Trace and Jonathan, we asked each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you have expertise. Jonathan, you told us you know a lot about the TV show Schitt's Creek, the Twitter account @m_crouton, and cults. Whereas Trace, you said you know a lot about Monty Python, Boris Karloff as Frankenstein's monster, and Minnesota cuisine. We have a lot to unpack.
Wow.
Later on, we'll ask you some in-depth trivia questions about one of these topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. If either of you gives an incorrect answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, high anxiety. First up, Jonathan with high. Jonathan, your question comes from a listener. Who is it, Helen?
I'll let her tell you herself, because we have our very first listener recording.
Ooh.
Listeners, if you would like to submit a suggestion for our What's the Difference round, go to gofactyourpod.com and click on Get Involved. Okay, hit it.
Hi, this is Allison Carroll of Fort Worth, Texas, and my question for What's the Difference is, while they both are things you say to someone of high stature, what's the difference between addressing a royal as Your Majesty and Your Highness? Your Majesty and Your Highness.
All right. Thank you so much, Allison. Jonathan, you heard Allison's question. What is the difference between saying Your Majesty and Your Highness? Jonathan, deep in thought.
I think that it has to do with whatever the occasion is. Like, Your Majesty would be for something very, very formal. And then Your Highness would be for having high tea.
Okay, very good.
I have no freaking idea.
You know what? That's a very reasonable guess, and we appreciate your sticking it out. All right, we don't know yet if you are correct, though. Trace, if you think she doesn't have it exactly right, you can steal. What do you think?
You address them as Your Majesty if they're sitting down, and Your Highness if they're standing.
Interesting, because they're literally higher than when they're sitting.
They have to make it easy for the commoner.
I understand. Well, that's what all royalty does. They make it easy for the commoner. All right. Well, this segment needs to be dethroned. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judge's table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Your Majesty is reserved only for a monarch, like the queen, the king, or the emperor. Your highness is used for other royalty, like a princess or a duke.
There you go. That's right. By the way, this wasn't always the case. Until 1519, all royalty was referred to as your highness, whether they were sitting or standing. But Charles V of Austria decided he wanted the title of majesty, and others, like Henry VIII, quickly copied him, and the title stuck. Unlike the heads of Henry VIII's wives. Helen, how did they do in that round?
I don't think either one of you got that.
No, very, very creative and reasonable answers just happened to be incorrect. All right, up next in High Anxiety is Trace. Trace, while Henry VIII's wives probably felt a lot of both, what is the difference between fear and anxiety? Fear and anxiety.
Fear is an actual physiological response to being asked the question, what's the difference between fear and anxiety? And anxiety is never knowing the answer.
Never knowing. All right. We somehow don't know if that's entirely correct. So, Jonathan, what do you think?
Anxiety is a constant. Fear is a sometimes.
Fear is a sometimes. Okay. I'm afraid that this segment is over. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Fear is an emotional reaction to a danger or threat that is known and external. You're reacting to a real thing that poses real harm right now. Anxiety is a reaction to a danger or threat that is unknown or uncertain or completely imaginary.
That's right. Fear is a core emotion that actually has an evolutionary purpose that helps us to survive because it can mobilize you to act appropriately. Anxiety might mobilize you to act, but it also might mobilize you to eat an entire box of Oreos. Helen, how did our guest do in that?
Neither of you were quite on target with this one as well. You were what? Circling the drain.
What a lovely image.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give both of you a half point because you weren't quite on target, but you were sort of in the ballpark.
Yes.
So yeah, a half point for both of you.
Circling the drain in the ballpark. All right. All right. Very nice. All right, Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Jonathan Brook has half a point and Trace Bull, you also has half a point.
Close game, and those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself. Helen, someone delivered happiness right to my door.
Let me guess. It's Magic Spoon.
It is Magic Spoon. I got a lovely box of Magic Spoon the other day, and I was thinking, there are so few things in life that I know as soon as I see them, they're going to make me happy, and yet Magic Spoon's delivery is one of them. It's so great to get a delivery of Magic Spoon because, you know, if you've been trying to cut down on carbs, sugar, unhealthy food, it might feel like you basically can't eat anything anymore, but oh, you can eat Magic Spoon, and it is so delicious and makes you happy as soon as it arrives. Helen, tell them, why does it make me so happy besides it being delicious?
Well, it's healthy. There are 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, 140 calories, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. You can build your own box or get a variety pack with available flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, and cinnamon.
And Magic Spoon is bringing back 2 super popular flavors, cookies and cream and maple waffle, permanently. Those are the ones I just got recently, and they are so
Yay.
Delicious. By the way, Helen, I don't know if we mentioned, Magic Spoon is cereal. It's cereal, people. It's all of these great things, and it's also cereal.
Oh, yeah, we should have opened with that.
Yeah, we might not be good at this, but the point is, Magic Spoon is very good at it. And, you know, when these cookies and cream and maple waffle flavors were first introduced for a limited time, they sold out extremely quickly. So we want to let you know to make sure to get them again and try them for the first time if you haven't already. They're delicious, they're indulgent, and yes, just to clarify one more time, they are cereal. Helen, how can people get that cereal with a special discount?
Go to magicspoon.com/gofact to grab your delicious cereal and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GOFACT at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. Although I'm not sure how many of you are going to be as happy as Jay Keith when he gets his Magic Spoon box.
I get an extra 10% of happiness, at least.
So if you don't like the cereal for any reason, they will refund your money, no questions asked. So remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/GoFact and use the code GoFact to save $5 off.
It's cereal.
Thank you, Magic Spoon.
Hi, I'm Annabelle Gurrich.
And I'm Laura House.
And we're the hosts of Tiny Victories.
My tiny victory is that I sewed that button back on the day after it broke.
We talk about that little thing that you did that's a big deal to you, but nobody else cares.
Did you get that Guggenheim Genius Award?
We don't want to hear from you.
We want little bitty tiny victories.
My tiny victory is a tattoo that I added onto this past weekend.
Let's talk about it.
My victory is that I'm 1 year cancer free, but my tiny victory is that I took all of the cushions off the couch, pounded them out, put them back, and it looks so great.
So if you're like us and you want to celebrate the tiny achievements of ordinary people, listen to Tiny Victories.
It's on every Monday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself with our guests, Jonathan Brook and Trace Beaulieu. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Jonathan, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the TV show Schitt's Creek, the Twitter account at @M_Crouton, and cults. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, you said you know a lot about the TV show Schitt's Creek. Why did you choose that for a topic?
I did fall into the Schitt's Creek cult and just devoured it during the pandemic and just fell in love with every single character. There were a couple of very powerful scenes, usually with Moira and Stevie, where there was such deep empathy and beautiful feminism and joy that they brought to their relationship that I would just be a puddle of tears.
Very well explained. Also, next, you said you know a lot about the Twitter account at @M_Crouton. I think you might have to explain a little bit about what this is in addition to what this is to you.
Well, crouton is a steer, a boy cow. So don't call him a cow. He's a steer.
Okay.
There is a sanctuary farm in upstate New York called Squirrelwood Sanctuary. And they have all sorts of rescued animals there. Like, it's a whole crazy menagerie of animals. Horses, pigs, a donkey, dogs, some geese. And they rescue animals. And somebody, I don't know, gave the two women who run the place the idea, like, well, you should, you know, Crouton should have a Twitter account. Like, he's such a cute cow. I mean, steer. So they started this Twitter account for Crouton. And they do these nightly little videos from the barn as they're tucking the animals in to sleep. And it is addictive and was such comfort during the pandemic, again, because it was calm and loving and felt like something that you could manage. And so they would ask for sort of contributions, and every week they would get more minty muffins, and then you could watch them giving the animals minty muffins, which were little, I don't know, pellets of gunk that that animals like. And then you could watch them tucking in Crouton and Mojo the donkey and Rue the pig and Shrimpy the large horse. And like the straight guy of the whole crew is this goat named Luscious. And Luscious, I swear to God, it's like such comedy because Luscious's expression never changes. And he's just always watching what's going on, and there's another minty muffin.
Wow.
And then it's just, it's great comedy.
It's amazing that this topic has not come up before on the show.
Seriously. From your description, I'm now obsessed and I haven't even experienced the Twitter feed.
You need to go see it.
All right. Well, shifting gears slightly, you also told us that you know a lot about cults.
Having been raised in a little bit of a cultish kind of thing, I thought, well, I'm a little obsessed with culty things, so that would be one of my topics.
What's your favorite cult? I mean, you know, just not to be in, but...
The thing that I'm, like, obsessed with this week is this new one, Love Has Won. Amy Carlson was, they called her Mother God.
That sounds like a cult, yeah.
Yeah, apparently she claims to have been reincarnated from both Jesus and Marilyn Monroe. So that was like, you had me at Marilyn Monroe.
Well, Jesus and Marilyn Monroe, the original power couple.
Often when I'm on the road, I'll have my guitar player, Sean, read me things about cults because I'm usually the driver, and then he'll just read me stuff about like BTK and...
And then you've got to go to the M. Crouton Twitter feed to come down from that, to
calm
yourself.
Yeah, obviously I don't sleep at all because I'm, I have terrible dreams.
All right, so to summarize, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the TV show Schitt's Creek, the Twitter account at @M_Crouton, and cults. Today we're going to quiz you about the Twitter account at @M_Crouton.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Excellent, we love that excitement. How did you first discover this Twitter account, if you remember?
My friend Lydia said, Joe, you really need to do this because you're a little out of control. You're too anxious, and we got to get through this thing. And this is, so every night before I would go to bed, I would look at the crouton the tucking in the animals, and I would be able to go to bed.
Oh my gosh, it's like emotional Xanax.
It's totally emotional Xanax.
First of all, I had a very big learning curve on this week because I had never heard of this, but it is adorable. I recommend our listeners check out this feed. But there are different ones of sort of just crouton being fed and saying goodnight, and then different animals running around and farm life. Are there particular ones that strike your fancy?
The pigs.
The pigs.
They have a bunch of pigs that are just like out of control funny. And when it's really hot, they fill up these little small kiddie pools with water, and the pigs are like 400 pound pigs. So they'll just like jump into, well, not even jump, they'll sort of waffle into the kiddie pools and then crush the whole thing. All the water falls out, but they're just happier than pigs. And you know what? And then also the sound of pigs eating watermelon. There's just nothing better.
I'm so glad I asked. All right. Well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic with our 3-part question. But before that, to give you a chance to show off, here are 5 trivia questions about your topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, your lotto total of 2 hints in these 5 questions. Now, Trace, do listen closely because you can steal if Jonathan gets any wrong. Trace, by the way, how much do you know about the Twitter account at @M_Crouton?
I am learning, and I am going there as soon as we're done here.
You won't regret it, I promise.
We raise chickens, so I know that some of the antics of animals can be quite tranquilizing and entertaining.
We'll see if that comes in handy. All right, Jonathan, here's question number 1. Although Crouton is a steer, he lives at SES, Squirrelwood Equine Sanctuary. What common farm animals are equines?
Equines are horses.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct for the point. You did not need the hint, but I know Helen was very eager to give it to you if you had needed it. Helen, what would that hint have been?
Come on, that was good.
That was really good.
That was very good.
That was really good.
Helen is high-fiving her camera. Fun fact, equines include the modern horses, zebras, and asses, as well as more than 60 species known only from fossils. There are, of course, equines at Squirrelwood Equine Sanctuary, although I don't believe they have any zebras. All right, here's question
number... Are there asses, though?
I knew we couldn't get through it without saying asses. I knew we couldn't get through it.
Isn't a donkey an ass? And the donkey's name is Mojo.
Well,
he talks
bonus,
a lot.
Bonus fun fact from Jonathan Brook. Here's question number 2. Crouton first gained fame in a video showing him licking a small single-wheeled vehicle that you commonly find on a farm or in a garden. What was it?
Single-wheeled vehicle
mm-hmm.
you find in a farm? I need a hint.
All right, Helen, how about that first hint?
Webster's defines this equipment as a small, usually single-wheeled vehicle that is used for carrying small loads and is fitted with handles at the rear by which it can be pushed and guided.
Oh, the wheelbarrow.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Excellent use of the hint. Fun fact, that original video on Twitter of Crouton licking a wheelbarrow now has nearly 2 million views and was captioned, Crouton and his wheelbarrow. They don't mess around.
The one thing I have not seen.
I recommend it. It's very
cute. I'm doing
cute.
That. I need the viewers. Yeah.
Trace, please be careful when you lick the wheelbarrow.
Just make sure it's not February in
yes.
Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That'll stick to it. All right, here's question number 3, Jonathan. Crouton, as you've noted, does not live by himself. He's got a bunch of buddy animals at the sanctuary too, many of whom show up on his Twitter account. But which of the following is not the name of an animal at Squirrelwood? Is it Pumpernickel, Rue, Mojo, Jack, or Jill?
Jill.
Very quickly answered, Helen.
That is correct.
That is correct. Yes, you actually had mentioned some of those names coincidentally earlier. Jonathan putting her hands up and dancing in triumph. Fun fact, Pumpernickel is a fellow bovine. Rue is a pig. Mojo is a donkey, as you'd mentioned. Jack is a dog. Other names of the animals on the farm, I believe you've actually mentioned most of these already, include Toy, Big, Mango, Shrimp, and Luscious OG.
That's the goat.
That is indeed the goat, the OG original goat.
The expressionless goat.
The expressionless goat.
And there are two other potbelly pigs called Mango and Kiwi.
Oh,
more bonus fun facts from Jonathan.
This is so much better than Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Right?
There is a lot of drama, amazing, though, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. You're 3 for 3. Here's question number 4. You, Jonathan Brooke, are not the only notable female singer-songwriter who is a fan of Crouton. What other musically talented woman not only also follows Crouton's Twitter account, but actually helped Crouton get to the farm in the first place using her own truck?
I want to say Nico Case.
Are you going to say that?
Yes.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Wow. It's Nico Case. And another triumphant arm raise for Jonathan. Jonathan, do you have a fun fact for this one? Have you crossed paths or worked with Nico Case?
I have not, but I have noticed her being mentioned on the feed once in a while. So I think she must live nearby and be a fan and buddies with the two women that run the place.
All right. Very good deduction. You are 4 for 4, have a chance to go 5 for 5 if you can get this question correct. You do still have a hint available. Jonathan, as we record this, Crouton has a new friend who arrived just last week. Though she's been referred to just as Mama, Crouton's Twitter account said a few days ago that a person with an unusual job title has been working with her and, quote, has made it very clear her name is Rose, end quote. What is the job title of that person?
She's very sick.
Mm-hmm.
So they're fixing her udders because they have infections in two parts of the udders.
Oh.
Person with an unusual job title.
Yes.
I need a hint.
Helen, how about that second hint?
She communicates to the animal.
Don't think too much. Listen to the hint.
Like a psychic? Because I know they had acupuncture the other
she
day.
She communicates to the animal.
An animal communicator.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Jonathan Brooke is...
That's not a job title.
It is a job title.
That's just weird.
Well, if you don't want the point, we're happy to take it away.
No, I want the point, okay, but I mean, because they showed a picture the other day of the dogs getting freaking acupuncture.
They do some unusual treatments there for the animal. They're very well taken care of.
I just love it. Yeah.
Animal communicator. Fun fact, Rose, that cow, is a dairy cow. She's about 3 years old and it was rescued from a feedlot. Jonathan Brooke, you are 5 for 5 on the @m_crouton Twitter account.
Thank goodness.
Trivia test. Congratulations. You obviously did very well in that round, but now here's your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Jonathan, like all superheroes, Crouton has an inspiring origin story. At a young age, he was advertised on a website and sold by a specific type of farm. For up to 3 points, how old was Crouton when he first came to Squirrelwood? What type of farm sold him? And on what website was he advertised?
I think that I know that it was a veal farm.
Okay.
And I think that it was on Craigslist.
All right.
But I don't know, I think, the first answer.
Okay, well, you can give it your best guess. If you're within a reasonable range, we'll probably give it to you. It's up to the expert.
Well, he was little, so I think he was maybe 8 months old.
8 months old. Okay. Helen is taking note of your answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is the most popular resident of Squirrelwood Equine Sanctuary, who has over 60,000 followers on Twitter. It's Crouton!
Crouton, are you there?
Oh!
There he is!
Oh my gosh! I see a barn.
We see a cow butt, and there he is! There's Crouton!
Awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
Hi, Crouton.
Crouton, I love you so much.
And Helen, somebody else is there as well. Who's that?
Also joining us is the co-founder of Squirrelwood Equine Sanctuary, who rescued Crouton and helps run his popular Twitter account. It's Beth Hyman.
Hello, Beth Hyman.
Hey. My God, hi, Beth Hyman.
Hello.
What? I'm
Hello.
Just like beside myself with joy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're so happy to have you. How is Crouton doing?
Crouton is good. We just had a thunderstorm roll through, but we are doing fine.
Excellent. And for our listeners, you are joining us from the barn. You did not bring Crouton into your Zoom in your house, so we appreciate your making those accommodations for us.
We are in the barn, so there might be some crazy noises.
We like it.
Beth, I can say officially and without question, this is the first time I have ever had a Zoom meeting with a steer.
Hey, there's always... a first for everything.
Now, we talk about cows, we talk about steer. We actually have done a What's the Difference on the show about steer versus bull. Do you get upset when people say cow instead of steer or vice versa?
No, we've been dragged a few times on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's okay. Cow, yes, steer, yes. I'll take yes. either. It's not trivia.
You'll take either. Tell us a little bit more about the Squirrelwood Equine Sanctuary.
So we are a 92-acre horse farm in the Hudson Valley of New York. Nice rolling hills, green this time of year, rain every day. And we are home to about 45 horses right now and the menagerie that
yes.
has been described already.
And what are the kind of services that you provide for your rescued animals
there? Basically, we bring them in and restore their health, provide long-term, that's Mojo if you hear him in the background. Basically, we make sure they're healthy and give them a place to live out their lives safely and happily.
Wonderful. And of course, you gladly accept donations from people. What is the site that people can go to donate? And what do you use the donations for?
It is squirrelwood.org is our website. And basically all the funds that come in support the animals. That's feed and, you know, whatever basically they need, medicine, vet care. That is primarily what it does. And obviously keep the lights on, right? That's important.
That I've heard, yes. And people can visit the sanctuary as well. You've had some visitors since Crouton's internet fame.
Yes, we have. It was pretty quiet during COVID. We shut down. Now we're back open again. So by appointment, we let visitors come in, spend time with Crouton and the rest of the crew. People have favorites that they want to visit with. So all the pigs are wandering around. They might wander through. You might hear them, but... yeah.
That's fantastic. Jonathan is so excited, I can tell, to visit next time she's in the area. She's
squealing. We're seeing Crouton's ears kind of peek above your shoulders a little bit.
Yeah, by the way, if you hear squealing, that could be the pigs or it could be Jonathan with excitement.
That's okay.
How did you get into animal rescuing and especially these kinds of farm animals?
My dad was a veterinarian, so I grew up with all manner of creatures, and it was sort of just a natural, you know, extension of that. We always dragged something home to save, and he'd put it in a shoebox and tend its health, and that's how I grew up. So this is a pretty natural state of being for me.
Why do you think Crouton was the one to touch so many people when you've got so many animals that you'd put out there?
You know what? He was the first one. He was a little calf and it was actually Nico who said, you know, he needs a social media account.
It was Nico?
Yeah, it was. And I was like, I need this like a hole in the head, but you know, here we are, you know, and you know, initially it was, you know, 5 people watching a nightly video. And I was like, I must be crazy, you know? And it just grew organically from there. And now we're about 60,000 strong, you know? It's great.
And you've got merch. Jonathan was mentioning to us off air that she actually has some of the some of the Crouton merch. What do you have, Jonathan?
I have the coffee mugs. I have a Crouton coffee mug and a Charlotte coffee mug.
Whoa.
Oh!
Is that Rose?
That's Mojo.
That was Mojo. Wow. Sorry, Jonathan, you were interrupted unsurprisingly by a donkey in a barn. Tell us again what you have there, Jonathan.
I have 2 coffee mugs. I have Crouton and Charlotte coffee mugs for my coffee.
Very, very sweet.
And Beth, are you wearing a t-shirt?
I am.
A merch t-shirt.
Everybody should get the Crouton Pride shirt. Yeah.
Yes.
Crouton Pride. Crouton,
I love that Crouton is woke.
He is.
Oh my God.
Look at that sweetheart.
I didn't know that boy cows had such long eyelashes. Oh God, I'm dead over here.
Crouton is just part of his name. Can you tell us what his full name is and where that name came from?
So there were a couple people here the day he arrived, and he was dubbed Marty Crouton Valentino because he has a heart on his head. I came up with the crouton. He was square and brown, so it was pretty obvious choice to me, but, you know.
Sure.
And online, the M underscore crouton, people actually think it's Monsieur. So he can be Monsieur Crouton.
Bonjour, crouton. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Crouton does have a heart on his head,
yeah,
on his
he does.
Forehead.
Oh, yeah.
And you're giving him scritches right now. Where does he appreciate the scritches the most?
Oh, right here. This is the spot.
Right here, under the sides of the cheeks, oh, it looks like, yes. And the jowls.
Right here.
Oh. My cold, cold heart is dripping with melt water.
That's what it took. That's what it took. Well, my goodness, I hate to have to move on, but when Crouton is just staring into my soul like that. But let's get to the reason what you brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the questions that we asked of Jonathan Brook. First, we wanted to know, how old was Crouton when he first came to Squirrelwood? Helen, what did Jonathan say?
Jonathan said 8 months old.
And Beth Hyman?
He was 2 weeks old.
2 weeks old, yeah.
2 weeks old, yeah.
But that probably goes to show how large cows and steer can look when they're that age. You probably look to be a lot older.
Yeah, they're about 100, 150 pounds. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Easy mistake to make, but I should have known.
That's all right, but no point there.
Wait. Mama cows push out like a 100-pound baby out their hoo-ha.
Yes.
Ha.
Helen, does that make the new baby in your household seem more manageable?
Yes.
Also, Beth, Rose was a birthing cow, right?
Yes.
And so she had to push out a lot of babies out of her hoo-ha, and that's why she was so depleted and needed rescue, correct?
Yes.
And please, let's if we're going to use words like hoo-ha, let's at least call it a moo-ha. All right, let's go to question number two that we asked. Guys, it's what this show is. You might as well accept it. This is our 89th episode. This is what we do here.
He'll be here all day.
I'll be here all day. Send your cards and letters to Helen Hong. all right, next we wanted to know from Jonathan, what type of farm sold Crouton? Helen, what did Jonathan say?
Jonathan said a veal farm.
And Beth?
Okay, she was very close. It's a dairy farm.
Dairy farm. Do you want to give her the point or a half point? That's up to you.
Oh, definitely a half point there.
Okay, half point. Half point, very good. Half point for Jonathan. We are looking for a dairy farm. All right, and finally wanted to know, on what website was Crouton advertised that allowed him to be rescued and brought to Squirrelwood Equine Sanctuary? Helen, what did Jonathan say?
Jonathan said Craigslist.
And Beth?
That is correct.
That is correct for the point. It was Craigslist, a rare positive experience that came out of somebody advertising on Craigslist. Beth, before we let you go, Jonathan, is anything you'd like to ask or say to our expert or experts while we have them here?
Oh, my God. I have so many questions. But how is Huey doing?
Huey's excellent. Growing like a weed.
And Huey is, remind us, please?
He's the smallest pig resident. He came from Philly. He hopped a flight, came to us from Philadelphia, and he's doing great.
And did Huey fly commercial?
No. He had a private plane.
What?
They come in style, right?
Whoa. Yeah.
It would have been something if Huey had flown a Huey, but I guess
not. Bougie yeah. Huey.
Hey, you're close. That's how we got his name. His little tail goes around like a helicopter.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, Jonathan, I can tell you're very invested. We do have to move on. We want to thank so much Beth Hyman for joining us. If people want to find Crouton and support Squirrelwood Equine Sanctuary, where can they do that?
It's squirrelwood.org. Visits are welcome. You can come see the animals and...
Wow!
Come on out!
I need to come visit sometime. And when I'm on tour in the neighborhood, I'll come by and visit. And,
amazing.
I think you need to do a concert at the farm, but that's just me.
Yeah, why not?
Maybe Nico and I can
that would be awesome.
Do that.
Awesome. Well, we thank you so much for joining us, everybody. It's Beth Hyman and Crouton. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. What a joy. This is like Christmas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of the round, Jonathan Brook has 7 points, and Trace Beaulieu has half a point, with a round of questions for Trace coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Trace about a topic he knows about. Plus, later, Jonathan and Trace will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself. Helen, we have a new sponsor. It is Rotman Business School.
Ooh, all business, all school.
All Rotman. You know, the job market is a mess right now, and whether you're looking for a new opportunity or want to make yourself a stronger candidate for promotion, how you present yourself is key to taking the next step.
Executive presence is the secret sauce to success. Rotman's unique virtual executive presence program will equip you with tools and tips to engage and influence others.
Yeah, Rotman has designed this comprehensive virtual program to work around your current schedule. With Rotman's executive presence, you can balance working from home and watching the kids with building your emotional intelligence and making connections with peers across different industries.
The University of Toronto Rotman School of Management is one of the best schools in Canada and the world, ranked number 17 for open enrollment executive education by the Financial Times.
Visit uoft.me/executive presence. That's uoft.me/executive presence to learn more and apply.
Class starts September 15th. Start your application today to save your seat.
That's uoft.me/executive presence. Rotman, here's where it changes.
Thank you, Rotman Business School.
Now that is some executive presence.
Hey there, beautiful people. Did you hear that good, good news?
Something about the baby Jesus?
He's coming back.
Or do you mean the fact that Apple Podcasts has named Fanti one of the best shows of 2020?
I mean, we already knew that we was hot stuff, but a little external validation never hurts, okay?
Hosted by me, writer and journalist Jared Hill.
And me, the ebony enchantress myself, Javel Anderson.
Fanti is your home for complex conversations about the gray areas in our lives, the people, places, and things we're huge fans of, but got some anti-feelings toward.
You name it, we Fanti. Nobody's off limits.
Check us out every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your Slayworthy audio.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself with our guests Jonathan Brook and Trace Beaulieu. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Trace, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about Monty Python, Boris Karloff as Frankenstein's monster, and Minnesota cuisine. First, let's find out a little bit more about each of those. Tell us why you chose Monty Python.
Monty Python pretty much saved my life when I was in high school. It was so not like any kind of comedy that we had ever seen before. I've had the great honor of meeting a few of the Pythons. And,
wow.
You know, again, when you meet your heroes and they're like really cool, normal people.
Yeah.
Even though they've provided this outrageous form of entertainment. Just one of the seminal pieces of entertainment in my life that have meant everything.
That's really lovely. All right, Trace, you also said you know a lot about Boris Karloff as Frankenstein's monster.
You know, again, it's when I was a kid, those films were on television late night on the weekends. I absolutely love Boris Karloff as that creature. I mean, he made hundreds of fabulous movies. That one resonates with me just because he's got so much pathos. Mm. He's supposed to be evil, but it's not his fault. He's in this situation really out of his control. And Karloff brings such humanity to that role, just absolutely inspiring from a human standpoint.
Now, are you one of those sticklers where if someone said, I loved Boris Karloff as Frankenstein, that you would smack them and correct them saying it's Frankenstein's monster?
No. Everyone's welcome. You know?
Oh, wow. That, you know, you're an open-hearted Frankenstein monster fan.
If we chat about it, we'll get back around to that and then maybe I'll gently say, you know, take them aside, you know, in a quiet corner.
Yeah.
You don't embarrass them publicly. Come
yeah.
on.
No,
I mean,
no,
that's
not at
just
all.
Rude. That's just rude.
That's what this show is for.
We're writing Frankenstein into my new musical.
Are you? Ooh. Jonathan, what a fun coincidence.
We're mentioning it. Yeah.
Not Frankenstein's monster, though. Frankenstein.
No.
Frankenstein's monster is harder to rhyme.
Exactly.
All right. And then finally, Trace, you said you knew a lot about Minnesota cuisine and you added the note, such as it is.
I was fortunate to not grow up forced to eat that food. Mm-hmm. Aside from walleye and things like that. But there's a lot of hot dish stuff that, you know, we were more into, like Chinese food and deli food and, you know, things that actually had flavor. but I am aware of it so that I can avoid it. the lutefisk, those things like that. Lefse's okay. It's like a crepe, you know, it's got sugar on it. But some of those nasty Scandinavian things.
You avoid. Yeah. Is there something that you love, though, especially of Minnesota cuisine?
I guess the walleye would be.
The walleye.
Yeah. Although in Minnesota, we get it all from Canada. There's no walleye fishing in Minnesota, commercial fishing anyway. But we live on a river, so whenever we want a walleye, we just wade out, grab one, and bring it back.
Wow, that's very industrious.
You are living straight out of Little House on the Prairie right now. You just wade out into the river and just grab a fish
there's
with
a
your
little
bare
more
hands.
Involved. I watched an eagle do that the other morning. He was eating a fish on a sandbar. And I was like, wow, that looks good.
All right, so to summarize, Trace, you told us you know a lot about Monty Python, Boris Karloff as Frankenstein's monster, and Minnesota cuisine. Today we want to quiz you about Minnesota cuisine.
All right.
Is there something that you think all the Minnesota cuisine has in common? Like, what's the defining characteristic of Minnesota cuisine?
A lot of love.
Hmm. That's lovely. That is literally lovely. Now, do you make Minnesota cuisine yourself? Do you cook?
I do cook. I don't do the hot dish unless we're going someplace where they require it.
And where would that be? Where do they require hot dish?
Any gathering, any picnic, any church function.
I was going to say church probably
Yes.
is the number one answer.
Almost national night out here as well.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of block parties, stuff like that.
Hot dish, I read, it does not have a specific recipe. It can vary from person to person. What do you traditionally put in your hot dish, Trace?
Well, the tater tot is a go-to. Mm-hmm. The tater tot can be, you know, mixed with so many things.
Yes. It's a very versatile food.
Yes.
Yes. I try to make it a staple of my diet. All right. Well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic to test your mastery in the subject with our expert level question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, Trace, here are 5 trivia questions about your topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions. Now, Jonathan, do listen closely, because if Trace answers incorrectly, you can steal. Jonathan, by the way, how much do you know about Minnesota cuisine?
I don't know so much.
Good for you.
Except there's just a lot of bars. They make bars a lot.
Yeah.
Like Congo bars and toffee bars and chocolate chip bars, and they say bar.
They do say bar, and you definitely have your Minnesota accent.
I literally, as a city dweller who doesn't know much about Minnesota at all, I literally thought you were talking about a drinking establishment. I was like, wow, are there that many bars in Minnesota?
There are.
Well, there are that too. Yes. They're good at drinking here as well.
But they love their dessert bars as well.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Here's question number 1 about Minnesota cuisine for Trace Beaulieu. Trace, although it's frequently associated with Hawaii's cuisine, what canned pork brand is such a product of Minnesota that there's a museum dedicated to the stuff in the town of Austin, Minnesota?
That would be your Spam.
Helen?
Spam, 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 wonderful Spam.
That is correct.
That is correct. And as Jonathan pointed out, the subject of another one of Trace's topics, Monty Python.
But Python the point, crossover.
That's great.
Yeah.
But the point does go to Trace.
Fun fact, Frankenstein's monster, I think, was made primarily out of Spam.
Really? Wow.
As a Korean-American, I am primarily made out of Spam.
Wow, Helen, we're learning so much about everybody. Yeah. Well, here's my fun fact. I have been to the Spam Museum and am currently drinking from the Spam mug I purchased there.
Wow. This is
nice.
I don't know if it's getting
I've never
the
been
shot.
To the museum. It was closed when we went.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, I can tell you everything that I learned there. It's a lot. All right, here's question number 2 for Trace Beaulieu. Trace, you can get a cheeseburger in any state, but Minnesota specializes in a burger where the cheese is, get this, inside the meat. What rhyming name is given to this amazing creation?
That would be the Juicy Lucy.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct for the point, the Juicy Lucy. All right, you are 2 for 2, Trace. Here's question number 3. I have a feeling you might know this. Minnesota's official state fish is, according to the state's tourism website, quote, number one in the minds of many who appreciate the challenge of catching it and the delectable taste of its firm white meat. What kind of fish is this?
That would be your walleye.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct, of course. You did not need the hint that time, but Helen, what would that hint have been?
It's not the floor ear.
That's right.
Huh?
Helen really missing those live audiences.
Yeah, yeah. Woo, pew, pew, pew.
Fun fact, walleye is also the state fish of South Dakota. Because apparently they can't do anything on their own. All right, you're 3 for 3, Trace. Here's question number 4. We talked about hot dishes, and if you visit a family in Minnesota, there is a good chance they'll serve you hot dish, a casserole-like creation that can include anything from canned soups to hamburger meat to those lovely tater tots, all stirred together and baked. And while hot dish is not unique to the state, Minnesota does have the only congressional delegation to hold a contest to see who can make the best one. What elected official started this politician competition tradition?
We're spending our money on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our roads and infrastructure can go by the wayside, but what is most important is the hot dish coalition.
Yes.
I would like the hint.
Helen, how about that first hint?
He is probably the only elected member of the federal government ever to win an Emmy for writing on Saturday Night Live.
That would be Al Franken.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct, Senator Al Franken. Jonathan, a little frustrated she didn't get a chance to steal on that one.
Because I knew it. I was going to say it, and I couldn't, I didn't know what the rules were. Was I allowed to steal or no?
No, only if he got it wrong. I'm sorry. That is the point for Trace. Fun fact, the most recent winner of the competition in 2019 was Representative Betty McCollum. And she had a very interesting recipe that I recommend you look up while you're not nauseated.
I'm sorry. I just need clarification. So yes, every lawmaker from the state of Minnesota has to submit their recipe for this hot dish.
Not just a recipe. They have to make it. And then there's a contest.
They have to make a hot dish.
Yes.
And it can go, and anything can go in it, usually tater tots.
Yes.
And then everybody tastes and everybody votes.
And then they are all buried somewhere near Ely.
Another great reason to consider moving to Minnesota. All right, Trace, you have a chance to go 5 for 5. If you can get this question correct, you do still have one hint available. Minnesota cuisine relies on Minnesota farmers, and since the mid-1950s, the Midwest Dairy Association has crowned a dairy princess at the Minnesota State Fair. This lucky lady is then immortalized with her likeness carved in butter. What is the official title of this buttery princess?
I think I know this.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen this done at the fair. I'm going to ask for a hint on this one.
All right, Helen, how about that second hint?
It's a royal title followed by a name that sounds like a letter of the alphabet, followed by the name of the galaxy we're in, and it all rhymes.
Princess K of the Milky Way? No,
Helen?
That's a different thing.
That is correct.
It is correct.
It is.
Princess K of the Milky Way.
Princess K of the Milky Way. Oh,
Jonathan
thank you
looks
for...
shocked.
Wow.
I was going to guess that, but you're so good, Trace.
He is so good. Trace, you have gone 5 for 5. Congratulations.
Wow. And I couldn't make the Tokyo Olympics, so this is much
better. Fun fact, for the past 4 decades, the sculptures have been carved by artist Linda Christensen. And at the end of the fair, the princess and members of her court get to take their likenesses home and spread them on toast.
What? I have a new item on my bucket list, which is to have my likeness in butter.
All right, Trace, you obviously did very well in that round, but now here's your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Trace, in addition to the fun foods we've discussed, Minnesota's also known for its fine dining, thanks largely in part to one resident who helped put Minnesota cuisine on the map. And while he lives in Minnesota, his food journeys have taken him all around the world in search of bizarre foods, winning an Emmy in the process. For up to 3 points, what is the name of this globe-trotting Minnesotan? What was the Twin Cities French restaurant where he first made his mark? And at what Minnesota stadium can you currently find his namesake Korean chicken?
Is the restaurant La Belle Vie?
La Belle Vie, all right.
And I'm blanking on the gentleman's name. I never got to La Belle Vie. I moved north of Stillwater, and that restaurant moved downtown as soon as I got here. And I took that as a big message. So I got the restaurant right. And what was the third part of the question?
We're looking at what Minnesota stadium can you currently find his namesake Korean chicken?
Oh, God, this is so hard because we have that's all we have is stadiums here. I will say the one that plays baseball in. I'm not a sports guy.
Really? I couldn't tell. Do you have a guess for the name of that stadium, Trace?
The Twins Stadium?
The Twins Stadium. Okay. And any guess on the gentleman's name?
I apologize.
Yeah. It's on the tip of your tongue, I can tell, but no answer there?
Pass. Or can I call for a sponsor?
No, you cannot. You can call your sponsor, but...
can I get a dish to pass?
You can do a 10-step on it, but no. Yeah. All right. We have the answers that Trace was able to pull. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
He is an Emmy and James Beard award-winning TV personality, chef, writer, teacher, and social justice advocate whose show Family Dinner will stream on the new Magnolia Network and currently on Discovery Plus. And he lives in Minnesota. It's Andrew Zimmern.
Hello, Andrew Zimmern.
Hello, how are you?
I was just going to say that.
You were just going to say that, Trace.
I am prostrate in front of you because I forgot your name.
That's quite all right. There was a little piece of me died inside having been such an avid fan of yours for so many years, but I get it. We're good.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. People, of course, have seen you as a judge on Chopped, Top Chef, Top Chef Masters, and Iron Chef, and of course know you from your whole franchise of bizarre foods, shows, and books. On Bizarre Foods, you would go just about anywhere and eat just about anything. I'm wondering, what's it like having that reputation precede you?
It's difficult. I go out to have a Juicy Lucy with my son at a local tavern, and somebody puts a raw pig's head with a knife in it in front of me, and they think that they're doing me a favor. I just want a burger with my child. But I will say both Trace and Jonathan have done a really great job letting people know what the central fact of Minnesota life is, and that is love and care for our fellow humans, despite some of the awfulness that we've seen over the course of the last, you know, not just years, but decades. Things don't make us whole. People make us whole. I can never repay that debt to the people of our great, my adopted home state.
I thought you were going to say tater tots make us whole.
I will say thank you, Helen. Thank you for reminding me about something I'd really like to clear up, because there was a ton of misinformation there. We seem to have, over the last couple of years have been trying to make sure that every opportunity that we see people spreading misinformation, we need to correct the record immediately.
Please. That's what the show's all about.
So hot dishes are assembled and layered. Casseroles are stirred and baked, right? I'll give you an example. Tuna noodle casserole has all those goods. It's all stirred in, sprinkle some potato chips or cheese or whatever on top and bake it. But it's one mixture underneath the surface. Hot dish is layered, like my tater tot hot dish, which, you know, starts with a ground beef mixture and then green beans and then a mushroom layer and then a tater tot layer.
So
and
good.
Then it's baked. Like several other people on the panel, and I think Jonathan mentioned it, I had never eaten a casserole or a hot dish in my life until I moved to Minnesota. And then you're inundated with them. I was at a friend's house once, and I said, what's for dinner? And they said, wagon wheel hot dish. And I was like, wagon wheel hot dish? And let me explain to you what it is.
Please.
It's an 18-inch pan. Okay.
Oh, God.
It's massive.
I'm in.
An 18-inch pan is massive. Homemade chili is the bottom layer. Then a boxed cornbread mix. The batter is made. It's spread on top.
Whoa.
Then you put a whole tomato in dead center. Okay, that's the spoke. And then you use hot dogs and you float them in the top, pulling them out to the edges, and you bake it.
I'd also like to point out, after hearing that, also you can find in Minnesota the Mayo Clinic, which has an excellent cardiology unit.
Yes.
You mentioned some of the social justice issues that have been happening in Minnesota. Helen introduced you as a social justice advocate, as well as the other credits. You actually see a very clear link between social justice and food. Can you tell us about that?
I do. One of the most obvious ways to track so many of the disparities in our life in a country that's predicated on equality, we've done a pretty lousy job of it since 1776. one of the things that allows us to celebrate our differences is with food. So I use that, and it's my area of expertise, and obviously do a lot of work. I co-founded the Independent Restaurant Coalition last year to try to save restaurants. I work with the UN, a lot of big fancy pants agencies, and sit on a lot of boards trying to make the world a better place.
Well, we're so grateful that you do. It's such a great example of how you can take this one thing that you love and really expand it to so many different areas of life and of helping people. It's also kind of the message behind your new show called Family Dinner, where you're literally visiting families making their traditional dinner. And you were doing that through the pandemic as well. Tell us about what that was like.
Well, I own a Minnesota production company called Intuitive Content. And when Magnolia was created pre-pandemic, they came to us and said, we want an intuitive content show. We have a certain look and feel with our food travel stuff, a little bit different than our true crime or our scripted and unscripted shows in other areas. And I immediately just blurted out, first thing came out of my mouth was Family Dinner. And then they came back and said, would you host it? And I think the reason that it really resonated with Chip and Joe and the folks at Discovery, their partners, was that in its simplicity, so much is revealed. So, you know, an example, we had a grandmother who was suffering a lot of domestic abuse, escaped the horrific household she was trapped in with her children, stashed the kids with her sister and escaped to America, worked for 3 years, saved up all her money, and brought the kids up to Iowa where she was living. That was 20 some odd years ago. The family has expanded and they gather together every week to make sure all generations understand how precious life is and how quickly it can turn. There's a lot of food shows that aren't going to tell you that story, but over a family dinner, which is seemingly a very simplistic idea, right? You know, fat white guy goes around America and eats with families. Much like my other show, Fat Guy Goes Around the World, Eats Bugs, there's actually, you know, there's a three-level chess situation going on, and it allows us to do things in that simplicity that other shows don't.
Yeah, no, a lot of people try to come up with a show and it's like, oh, let's bring two celebrity guests together and quiz them and bring on an expert or something like that. That'll never work. Don't stop doing that.
I love that.
All right, Andrew, let's get to the reason that we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the questions that we asked of Trace. We wanted to know, what was the Twin Cities French restaurant where a certain globetrotting Minnesota resident made his mark first? Helen, what did Trace say?
Trace said La Belle Vie.
And Andrew?
Café Un Deux Trois in the Fauché Tower.
Café Un Deux Trois was the correct answer. No point there, but a seemingly very reasonable guess.
Excellent guess, and French.
And French, which...
That's as far as I could go in the French.
Yeah. Next, we wanted to know, at what Minnesota stadium can you currently find that chef's namesake Korean chicken? Helen, what did Trace say?
The Twins Stadium.
And Andrew Zimmern?
Semi-correct. Target Field. Where the Twins play.
Okay, well, would you like to give him the point or a half point or none? It's up to you.
I'd like to give half points. I believe in half points. I also believe that Jonathan should get a point or two for knowing the answers and not being able to steal despite your own rules. So
wow, the rare points awarded to the other contestant by our expert. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, but I didn't know about Twin Field, whatever.
Jonathan, ixnay on the knowing nay. Take the point. No.
Wait, so Andrew, is it called Andrew Zimmern's Korean Chicken?
Our booth is called The Canteen, so I believe... I haven't been this year. So it's,
well, look it up, and I believe it is actually called, Andrew Zimmern's KFC with an asterisk.
Ah!
Very clever. Yes. Very clever of them. Yes. Very clever
the
of them.
The asterisk meaning don't sue us.
Very, very clever of them.
All right. So a half point there for Trace. And finally wanted to know, who is that globetrotting Minnesotan we've been speaking of? Helen, what did Trace say?
Trace could not pull the name.
But what is the name he should have pulled, Andrew Zimmern?
That would be... Andrew Zimmern.
Andrew Zimmern. No point there.
I got that one right.
Trace, before we let Andrew go, is there anything you'd like to say or ask of our expert while we have him here?
We talked about all this hot dish and all this stuff and spam and things, and this sort of old world Minnesota food. One of the great things that happened, I think, late 70s was the Hmong and Vietnamese coming here and bringing flavor. Is there something on the horizon that we should look for?
I think what you're going to see, and this takes a couple of generations, is now we have chefs, cooks, talented culinarians who are East African, who are Hmong, who are now rising to national prominence and shining a light on that cuisine and their people and their roots. Yia Vang, who is probably the most popular Hmong chef in Minnesota, is now doing national TV stuff and is getting out there and has a couple of restaurants opening. You know, you see Sean Sherman, the sous chef, opening a indigenous First Peoples restaurant that just opened a couple of weeks ago.
And by the way, that sous chef, S-I-O-U-X. The sous chef, yes. That way, yeah. The sous chef.
We have a very large Mexican and Central American population hidden. You know, a lot of Salvadorans are in the Twin Cities. And I think, you know, those foods are just going to be plussed up because the diners are requiring it, right? Mm-hmm. I hope it encourages more people to reach out to their fellow humans. I think it's never been more important in our country to do that.
Well, what a wonderful message to end on. Thank you so much for joining us. If people want to find out more about you and your work, Andrew, where can they do that?
Oh, all things Andrew Zimmern are at andrewzimmern.com.
Excellent. We thank you so much for joining us and for blessing us with your wonderful message about how to view the world. I think it's really heart-opening, and we thank you so much. Andrew Zimmern, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, Helen, what is our score as we head into the final round?
At the end of this round, Jonathan Brooke has 7 points and Trace Beaulieu has 6 points.
Oh, quite a comeback for Trace. Let's see what happens now, because now it is time for our final round we call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with Trace and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. Again, the answer to each statement is true or false. Here we begin. Trace, Mall of America is located in Minnesota.
True.
That is correct.
Jonathan, Mall of America has over 100 stores.
True.
That is correct.
It currently has 520. Trace, Mall of America has an aquarium.
True.
Correct.
Jonathan, people can get married underwater at the aquarium.
True.
Correct.
Trace, if you don't want to get married underwater, Mall of America also has a wedding chapel.
True.
Correct.
Jonathan, it's called the Chapel of America.
True.
Incorrect.
No, that would be tacky to get married at a chapel at a mall called Chapel of America. No, it's called the Chapel of Love.
Oh.
Trace, over 8,000 couples have had ceremonies there.
True.
Correct.
Jonathan, wedding packages start at $249.
True.
Correct.
Trace, wedding packages include the choice of a staff minister.
True.
Correct.
Jonathan, they offer a choice of 4 reverends and 2 pastors.
True.
Correct.
Trace, but a rabbi will cost extra.
True. True. Always.
We're not going to count that last one. It turns out a lot of us Jews don't want to get married in a mall in Minnesota. Let's thank Jonathan Brooke.
No judgment.
Yeah, no judgment. Let's thank Trace Beaulieu and Jonathan Brooke as Helen tabulates the final score. Helen, are you ready to announce the winner of today's show?
Jay Keith, guess what?
What?
It's a tie!
Oh my goodness! What a competition!
Ugh. Both Jonathan Brooke and Trace Beaulieu have 11 points!
Wow! All right.
Look at us go.
Look at you go, indeed. All right. That means we're going to go to the tiebreaker. The tiebreaker works like this. The answer is a number. Whoever gets closer to the correct number wins. Now, we do not play Price is Right style, so no guessing $1. I'm going to ask the question. You'll think about it for a moment, and then I'll ask you to blurt out your answers at the same time on the count of 3. So don't answer out loud right away. All right. Here we go. In the most recent Supreme Court session from October 2020 to July of 2021, what percentage of the court's rulings were unanimous? Again, we're looking for a number, the percentage of the court's rulings that were unanimous. All right. Jonathan is locking in her answer, which looks like it was written down on the window over there. Trace. Trace rightly doesn't care as much. And Trace is counting on his fingers, trying to recall all of the decisions of the last Supreme Court session. All right, on the count of 3, please say your answers. 1, 2, 3.
6%.
All right, Jonathan says 1. Trace says 6. The actual answer, believe it or not, 44%. 44%.
Wow.
That means, Trace, you were closer. Congratulations, Trace. You are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. Trace, what will you do with your championship?
I will wear the robe until the next winner, and then I'll give the scepter and the crown to the next lucky person.
I think you should have to make one of those wagon wheel hot dishes.
I was going to say that. This is a cause for celebration.
I'll make it, but I won't eat it.
I was going to eat it until they put the hot dogs on the top, and then I'm
oh,
like,
oh, you got to have the hot dogs. What are you going to use? Tofu dogs? Come on.
I haven't had a hot dog since I was 12.
You could have a tofurkey dog.
Well, thank you both for representing Minnesota so well and for being such lovely guests. We want to give everyone here a chance to promote anything that they might like people to know about. Jonathan Brook, where can people find you and your work?
JonathanBrook.com.
Simple and easy. A pleasure and an honor for me personally to have you here. It's so wonderful for me to be able to host someone whose work and art has meant so much to me. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right, Trace Beaulieu, I also like you and your work. Where can people find you?
We are on Eventbrite. Look for The Mads Are Back. We have a show on August 10th at 8 o'clock Eastern. That's the only place you can find me. I'm not anywhere else.
Nowhere else. He's an invisible man in an invisible world. You don't exist, but yet you're somehow here. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Trace Beaulieu. Ladies and gentlemen, my hosting partner is Helen Hong. Helen, what do you have going on?
If you haven't already checked out the show Never Have I Ever on Netflix, I am in season 2 of that. So check that out. You can also follow me on the socials at Funny Helen Hong, because some other woman named Helen Hong has all my handles and I haven't killed her yet.
One day at a time, Helen. One day at a time. Helen Hong. And me, please watch The Hustler on ABC. I wrote a bunch of the questions on that show. You can find me on Twitter at @J_Keith and on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. That just leaves me to thank Trace Beaulieu, Jonathan Brook, Beth Hyman and Crouton, and Andrew Zimmern. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Update our wiki at GoFactorWiki.fandom.com and buy our T-shaped shirt at maxfunstore.com. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear, come see us live. Someday, we may have an announcement about that soon. Go to GoFactorPod.com for our schedule and tickets. And give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts like Niels Cole did. He, she, or they said, I really love this show. Don't know how much more needs to be said. Thanks, Niels Cole. That says it all. Ellen?
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised and produced by Jim Newman and J.K. Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from various homes across the country. Questions on Go Fact Yourself were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. It is produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Our theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Maximum Fun's senior producer is Laura Swisher. Associate producer and editor and everyday hero is Julian Burrell. Today's show was engineered by Dave McKeever. Special thanks to Willie Norkin at the Brooks Group, Stephanie Pappas at PRA, Sean Hall, Brody Greenwald, Aaron Ferdinand, Sarah Rodenbaugh, Brandon J. Carr, Clint Tauscher, Mike Avellanos, Adam Nediff, Dave Bianchi, Erich Tran, and Christine Velada. I've been Helen Hong!
Let's go visit Crouton!
Yes! So cute!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.